All right, we're going to enter into chapter 3 this morning. One of the things that I found interesting about preparing for this class is there's just a lot of vocabulary words, which I'm not sure whether we'll spend a ton of time on that, but you look at starting in verse 2, we have peaceable, gentle, humility, and then in verse 3, we have foolish, disobedient, deceived, lust, pleasures, malice, envy, hateful, hating. So we need to look at a lot of those things this morning, and mostly because of the first verse there, remind them. And this particular word for remind means to bring into the forefront of our thinking. And a lot of us, we know the information. And when you hear a sermon or hear classes, you're not really hearing anything you don't already know. But oftentimes, even though we know it, it's in the back of our mind. And where do some of these things need to be?
In front of our mind.
Okay, they need to be in the front of our mind. How do we keep them there?
Thinking about them.
Okay. Meditate on these things day and night. Don't ever stop talking about them. Don't ever stop thinking about them. Let them be for frontlets in your eyes, signs on your hand, on your doorposts, on the lintel. These are things that we simply have to... Now, what is it everything, though? Do I have to remember everything? Are you sure? Well, the way I look at it and the way that I've grown as a Christian is I try to focus on the things that are the biggest problem or the most important things that I feel like I need to have, and then I try to keep those things in my mind. For example, 2 Peter 1, the virtue, knowledge, self-control, I keep those in my mind. I pray about them almost every day. I'm always looking at them. I'm always looking at my life and looking at those things. And then, of course, the particular weaknesses that we have, we need to know those scriptures. They need to be in the forefront of our mind. But everything else still, as he says here, when's the last time we thought about being subject to rulers and authorities? Is that something in our mind all the time?
Yeah.
And I think for most of us it is. Although, for the most part, what it boils down to is we don't run stop signs, we try not to run red lights, we try not to speed. As far as anything else goes, what kind of relationship do we have with civil government? I mean, we do our taxes every year. What else? I mean, what else do we have to do to be in submission? Carl?
Well, we obey all the laws as long as they don't interfere with the laws of God.
Right. But for most of us, does that need to be in the forefront of our minds?
No,
I mean, it's not like we don't interact a lot with civil government. And so, you know, if you're called for jury duty or you get pulled over or something along that line, then, yeah, you're going to have to deal with that. But for the most part, it's going to be taxes and it's going to be in submission. Do we have a lot of civil disobedience today?
Yes.
People feel like the best way to show their discontent with the government is to break laws?
Yeah.
And is that what Christians should do?
No,
see, we have to be in submission. And remember, this is being written toward the end, you know, right in the middle of the 60s. And starting in the 70s, we start getting these terrible, actually before the 70s, we start getting these terrible persecutions. Is it easy to submit to civil government when civil government wants your head? And but that's what they're told to do. Okay, well, we don't need to spend a lot of time on that. But being ready for every good work. What does that mean? Being ready. In Deuteronomy, three different times, God says, you shall not hide yourself when you see your neighbor's donkey wandering in the field. Now, what does that mean, you shall not hide yourself?
Well, you should do what you can to help.
Okay, what if you hide yourself, though? What do you do?
Look the other way.
Okay, you pretend you didn't see it, right? Or you overlook it and don't do it. So there's two kinds of Christians. There's a Christian who is looking for every possible good work they can do, and then there's Christians who are so busy that they try to put those things out of their mind. And I think we need to look at ourselves seriously to determine which kind of a Christian that we are, because he has said this so many times now. Back in verse 14 of the previous chapter, we are his own special people, zealous for good works. Now, verse 1, we are ready for good works. Verse 14, let our people also learn to maintain good works, to meet urgent needs, that they may not be unfruitful. So this too needs to be in the forefront of our minds. We need to be looking for things that we can do to be fruitful, to accomplish good work. All right, anybody on verse 1? Carl?
And we're also taught to not to look upon our own things, but the things of others, which simply means that if we see our brother or think our brother is in need, we should go to him and help before we even have to ask.
Yeah. Including if your brother is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore them in a spirit of gentleness. So there's physical needs, spiritual needs, emotional needs, but most important are the spiritual needs of our brethren. Okay, in verse 2, to speak evil of no one. We've addressed this a couple of times in the past. Why do you think that the translators chose to transliterate the word blaspheme for God and then translate it to speak evil of man? When I say blaspheme, what do you think automatically? Speaking evil of who?
God.
Of God. But why do we use the word blaspheme for God when it's the same word for man? Is it any less terrible to speak evil of a man as it is to speak evil of God?
No.
And you look at that, and I think the passage in James, let me catch up here on my notes real quick. Yeah, why don't we turn over to the, I think it's the third chapter of James. I'll catch up here a second. Yeah, James 3, 8 through 12. And let's see, who's gotten there? Richard, are you there? James 3, 8 to 12.
Yes. James, what was that now?
James chapter 3, 8 to 12. Well, I thought you had it already.
Okay. James 3, 8. 8 through 12. Okay. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or grapevines bear figs? Thus, no spring yields both salt water and fresh.
All right, so the point that is being made here is that we bless God. Very few people are going to curse God, right? I mean, that's a very terrible thing in most people's minds. But as James points out, if you're going to bless our God and Father, how can you curse those who have been made in the similitude of God? I mean, we're in his image and after his likeness. So as far as James is concerned, there's very little difference between cursing God and cursing man. And he likens it to salt water and fresh water. Now, if I'm blessing God, then that's fresh water. But if I'm cursing man, then what's coming out? This salty water, this water that doesn't taste good at all, bitter water. And since the same fountain can't come out with both, what does that mean if we curse men? Then we have bitter water. And so we have to be careful. I know it's easy. You get frustrated with people. You know, Jesus said, don't call people raka or moron or jerk or stupid. And yet, it's such a temptation to do that. But if you call someone stupid, is that a curse? Now, I'm not saying if I do something wrong and you say, Alan, that was really stupid. Now, is that a curse? No, it's just a statement of fact, right?
Yeah.
But if you say, you are stupid, or And it's easy for these to come out. I had a terrible problem with this as a kid, and I noticed that sometimes when I get frustrated, those words still want to pop out. Is that good? According to this passage, how many people can we speak evil of? No one. So if the guy in front of me is being a complete moron, an idiot, and jerk, what do I do? I keep my mouth shut. And I don't even think those thoughts. Because as Jesus said in Matthew 5, if we have those thoughts, we're guilty. We're guilty of murder. We're guilty of the judgment. Carl, do you have your hand up?
Yes, but like you say, let us not confuse cursing a person or having evil surmisings. Let us not confuse that with the facts. You see, if I say Hitler was a murderer, he was a murderer.
Right.
That's not a curse.
Right.
That's just a statement of fact.
Sure. But what if you say he was a jerk?
Well,
is that a statement of fact or is that a curse? See, it's the terminology. I mean, we have words that are simply curse words, and I'm not talking about the four-letter words we don't use very often. There are words that we use, just like they used, to express complete contempt and disgust for somebody without outlining at all what it is they actually did. Now, if I go to someone and I show them their fault alone, then I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. But if I go to you and I talk about what a sinner this person is and how vile they are and disgusting they are, and I start using terminology, then am I using my mouth properly? See, and this is a problem. You remember in Proverbs 31, the law of kindness is on the lips of a worthy woman. And so this is what we all need to be struggling with. All right, any other thoughts on that, Rob?
You know, it's just like the definition of gossip. It can be truth. Gossip can be truth-telling. But the true meaning of gossip is simply saying those things we shouldn't be. There may be some truth I know about you. Maybe completely true. But why? What's my motivation in telling somebody or saying something about you? And so I think this is what some of this is saying, that be careful and analyze what we're saying, why we're saying it, and what benefit is it to even say it. Because sometimes we're making ourselves feel good if we tear down somebody else, or we don't understand something, so we're just flapping our jaws. And, you know, this is difficult, something we all have to work on, because we may not think we have evil motives in saying it, but at the end of the day, that's probably what it is.
Right. Well, and when you think of what Jesus said, for every idle word that a man shall speak,
give an account,
and by your words you will be justified or condemned. So that's pretty serious. I mean, these aren't even the words we're thinking about. You know, sometimes we say things and, oh, I didn't mean it. Well, does that matter?
No.
No, if you said it, you're going to give an account of it. And if you said it in front of someone, then you need to take care of it. Johnny?
I think the term that we use most today is think before you speak.
Yeah. Well, think before you speak. But think before you speak with scriptural prohibitions and conditions and characteristics of the language that we are to use, as far as love and mercy and compassion and grace and not anger and bitterness, as we'll see in a little bit here. Carl?
I did a study on that. I had a word once years back. And that word simply means using words that doesn't profit. Has no profit to them.
Right.
So when we might say something that, like jesting and joking and that type of thing, it has no benefit, no spiritual benefit.
Right.
You see.
Well, it's just like that thing on your gear shift, you know, on your car. When it's in idle, what's it doing?
Nothing.
Yeah, it's just you know, some people, their mouth's just running. Their mind's not engaged. They're not thinking about what they're saying. Some people just love to talk, and they don't always think about what they're saying. Okay, what is that? Even a fool, if he holdeth his tongue, is considered
wise.
To be wise. So sometimes it's better not to say a whole lot.
I just thought it was something, a joke. It was a joke. It was.
Should you be saying this, Richard? Okay, go ahead.
Well, it was just this person that wasn't. His mother told him not to say anything, though they know he was a fool. And he didn't, and they still call him a fool. And they spoke, said something to him, he didn't say anything. I'm not good at telling a joke, but they found out that he was a fool regardless. Because he wouldn't say anything. She told him not to say anything because they would find out that he was a fool.
Well, but that's what the scripture says. If you keep your mouth closed a lot of times and think before you speak, you can avoid that folly from ever coming out. But, you know, I guess if you're a fool, what's that? There's another verse in there that says a fool makes himself known wherever he goes. I think it's how it's put. Yeah. All right, any other hands? I thought I might have caught one or didn't catch one. Okay, so now we come to some very big vocabulary words, peaceable, gentle, and humility. And unfortunately, these words are translated with a lot of other words, and so we have to take a little bit of time and just kind of grapple with them a little bit. Generally speaking, when we think about being peaceable, what are we looking at?
Free from hostility or something like that.
Okay, free from hostility.
Get along.
Getting along with people. This is the word that's used in the eldership qualifications as no brawler. And so you think, well, how in the world does peaceable get to being no brawler? Well, it is one of those words like profitable and unprofitable. Well, this is fighting and unfighting, or fighting, and they use the alpha privative in front of it. So this is someone who will not fight. They will not fight. Was Jesus like that? As a lamb before its shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. So Jesus did not fight for himself. It's very difficult not to do that. It's very difficult not to take a stand and fight for ourselves. But as Paul points out in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, sometimes is it better to be defrauded? Sometimes is it better to turn the other cheek and go the second mile? Be peaceable even though you have every right to take a stand and fight for your rights? And this, again, is a big problem in our culture today, because in America we have our rights and people have pushed those rights into wrongs. And you see this all the time, this road rage problem and the people who are just there, they've got a chip. What do we mean by a chip on your shoulder? Okay, you knock that chip off, we're going to fight. And some people, if you disagree with them, if you try to correct them, you're cruising for a bruising, more or less. I mean, you're in a situation where you just know, is it worth it? Is it worth going to talk to this person? Because if you do, you know what's going to happen. And sometimes people don't get to grow because other people aren't going to want to talk to them. They're not going to want to come to them and show them things. And some people don't want to have that happen. So we need to learn to be peaceable. And that means that we are not going to fight and we're not going to stand up against. Now, this isn't talking about convictions. This isn't fighting for God. Fighting for God and having convictions has nothing to do with this word peaceable. This has to do with our own personal things, not anything to do with God. So when it comes to my reputation, to my pride and arrogance, to my things and the way I do things, then what should I be ready to do? Always ready to compromise. Always ready to allow someone else to do it their way. As long, again, and like I said, we don't carry this so far, because it doesn't have anything to do with our relationship with God. It has to do with our relationship with ourselves and with other people. And so this is a struggle, because we're so convicted fighting for God that sometimes we can't see that really what we're fighting for now is ourselves, not for God at all. All right, any thoughts on that one? Charles?
Yeah, also in today's society, a lot of people take kindness for weakness.
Yes.
If you are a kind person, I look at you like you are very weak, you're not strong, whatever. So, in some people's mind, you have to find that happy medium right there. In other words, I'm letting you know that I'm not going to be aggressive, but I am going to stand for what I know is right. And whenever you do that, it can go either way with some people. They can look at you like you're a militant, somebody who really doesn't have respect, you know, for anyone at all. But, you know, coming from a Christian standpoint, there are things that I know that the Lord wants us to do and to stand for, and we do that. And somebody that don't understand that, you know, they think that you're weak or whatever. You're coming from a different perspective right there. You're coming from a Christian point of view rather than the world's point of view.
Right.
And you have to kind of find that medium to let them know that, yes, I serve the Lord, and I'm doing this out of respect of what God would help me to do and
right.
the way He would help me to do that. But I'm not going to just say that, you know, you can just take me for anything you want to.
Right. So. There's such a fine line there, though,
yeah.
that we have to be careful with, because
yeah.
Jesus said you have to turn the other cheek, go the second mile, and take wrong and be defrauded. And these are not relationships with God. These are relationships with ourselves. Now, we can be absolutely convicted in the Lord's church with doctrine and morality and things along that line, but when it becomes personal, then we need to be peaceable. And we need to be able to throttle it back. It's kind of like Paul, when Paul was struck in the face and he said, "You whited wall." And then he found out he was the high priest. What did he do then? Even though he'd been insulted, when he found out he was the high priest,
he apologized.
Yeah. I didn't know. And he backed off. Now, that's what we're looking for is, yes, he was convicted and he had every right to call that man a hypocrite because of what he had just done. But when he found out he was a high priest, he realized that now it had just become a personal thing and he needed to back away from it and let God deal with it. Because when it comes to matters of authority, there's certain times where we just have to let God deal with it. I saw a hand. Was it Johnny?
No, meekness is not weakness.
Right. But see, you guys keep jumping ahead. We're at peaceable. Gentle is the one term, and then meekness is the next word. So, I'm just being facetious, but that's the problem. We have these vocabulary words, and we tend to blend them together when there's actually three different concepts here. The first one is we're not going to fight for our rights. Now, we will fight for God. We'll take a stand for God, but not for ourselves. It's just not what God wants us to do. Now, the next word, gentle, is a word that means equitable, fair, and mild and gentle. And it is a term that is used often in the scriptures to describe forbearance. Matter of fact, let your forbearance be known to all men. What exactly does forbearance mean? That's this word, forbearance, gentle, fair, mild. You remember when you were a kid, did you go to your dad or to your mom when you had a request or there was a problem? Usually one of them was harsher than the other one. Who did you want to go to? I always went to my mom because she was a lot milder than my father was. And we do that in the church as well. There's some people in the church you wouldn't want to bring your problems to because you know the first thing out of their mouth is going to be harsh judgment. And then there are other people that you can go to and you're going to get the same harsh judgment, but it's not going to come out that way. It's going to come out kind and gentle. And so the judgment won't be any different, but the methodology. And who do you want to go to if there's a serious problem? Somebody you know is just going to go for the throat, or somebody that you know is going to back away and just walk you through it and help you through it? And we've all met both kinds. There's a lot of people in the Lord's church that are very harsh. There's other people that are gentle. Now, is there a time for harshness? Yeah, there's a time for that. But is it right away? And is that our first approach when somebody comes humbly saying, I've got a serious problem? Well, you shouldn't have. Well, am I going to go to that person again? See, so gentleness here. Was Jesus gentle most of the time, even with the Pharisees, even with his enemies, even with that woman brought in the act of adultery? How did Jesus approach those things? He was very forbearing, very patient, very loving, because the day of judgment is coming, but until it comes, we need to be working with and helping people to get where they want. And this is the difference, I guess, between exhortation and rebuke. And Jesus exhorted first and saved the rebukes for last. So this is a person who, and again, this is something we need to be reminded of, because there's certain worldviews that we have. There's certain ways that we look at people. And some people look at people as stupid, and every time they prove they're stupid, we get harsh. We have harsh things to say, and this all kind of ties back to some of the things we were saying earlier. And then there's other people. I want to read Aristotle's definition of this word. Aristotle describes in full the action of epikeia. And here's the quote: to pardon human failings, to look to the lawgiver, not to the law, to the intention, not to the action, to the whole, not to the part, to the character of the actor in the long run and not in the present moment, to remember good rather than evil, and the good that one has received rather than the good that one has done. To bear being injured, to wish to settle a matter by words rather than deeds. Now that's how Aristotle saw this word, and I think he captures it pretty well. And so we look to the whole and not to the part, right? I mean, at any individual moment, can we all see things in each other that if we were harsh, we would just write us off? But if you look at the whole character, yeah, everybody's got weaknesses. Everybody has flaws in their character. And some people go through life pointing out those flaws and looking down on people for their flaws. And other people go through life seeing the flaws, seeing the whole picture, and then working gently to remove the flaws. And that's what a gentle person is going to do. And so this is a big term, and it's something that we really need to look at. All right. And then the last word, okay, must be later. All right, what does showing mean? If you're going to have a showing at your house, or if you're going to be showing your car, what does that generally mean?
You're inviting people to come in and look.
All right. And what do you want to portray? If you're trying to sell your house, is it a mess?
Very business.
Okay, so that's kind of what this word means here, showing all humility. It means to demonstrate, to manifest, to display, to put on the stage, so to speak. In other words, people are watching us. And the way they see us respond is showing one of two things. Now, the word, I don't know, what words you have? I have humility in my translation. Everybody got different translations here?
Meekness.
Okay. And that's really the word here is meekness. This is the word that Jesus used, blessed are the meek. And so this is a term that means gentleness, mildness, meekness. We've talked about this in the past. It's strength harnessed. It's someone who has the power and the strength to crush and destroy, but refuses to use it. Now, again, Jesus said, I am meek and lowly, and you will find rest to your souls. Now, does Jesus have enough power to crush us?
Yes.
And does he have any good reason to crush us?
Yes.
Is there any human being on the face of the earth that Jesus wouldn't have a good reason to crush if he wanted to do so? And so his meekness refers to the fact that he's going to use his strength to save, not to judge. And that's what he said. I didn't come to judge the world. I came to save the world. Now, is he going to come back and judge the world?
Yes.
Yeah, it's coming. And he has the power, the authority, and the means to bring it about. But for now, he's going to use his power to be a blessing to other people. And You know, debaters have this kind of a situation. They have the ability to crush people and crush their reasoning, but is that always the best way to do it? I mean, are we debating to crush, or are we debating to convince and to move and to change? And so Jesus could win any argument, any debate with anyone and crush them. And we see that in Matthew 23 with the Pharisees. Now, could he have done that the first time he met them? You guys are hypocrites, you're full of dead men's bones. But he was gentle to them until the week before he was going to be gone. And then he decided to tell them and show them exactly what they were. So this is a term, and again, as we look back at the vocabulary that we're working with here in chapter 3, we're dealing with speaking evil of no one, being peaceable, gentle, meek, and showing meekness to all men. And then he explains why. The word for here is the reason and the cause for the previous statements. In other words, why is it that I want to be obedient and ready to do good works and not to say anything bad about anyone and to be humble and peaceable and gentle? And it's because we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy. Now, what's Paul's point there? Why does he put it like this? Those statements are all true, but in the context here, what is he trying to say to us? See, go ahead, Ron.
That we're no better if we've done these before. Then how would we want to be treated when we were there before?
Okay.
And so he's reminding them to reflect back, and we all do that when we know, hey, I've been in your shoes, I know how you feel, and I want to try to help you through this, whatever the situation is. Okay. If you're helping somebody, or if it's just self-examination, maybe this is more just the individual needs to remember where they were and then treat other people in kind.
Okay. Richard, I saw your finger just above Cameron's head. Is that a sign?
Also, we can go back there, too, again, if we're not killed.
Right.
So, consider that.
Yeah.
And they have done that.
Okay. And both of those are true. We like to think of ourselves as maybe being a little better than other people because we're a Christian. But without the grace of God, is anybody any better than anyone else? See, we don't have any business judging other people, being harsh to other people, being judgmental to other people, being cruel or rude to other people, looking down on them as stupid or ignorant or foolish, because not too long ago, we were everything that we're now looking down on this person. Laura?
That's what I was going to say, is that, you know, God forgave us, so we were just as bad. And God's love and kindness forgave us, and we should treat people the same way.
Right.
Realizing that we've been forgiven.
Well, and equally important.
They deserve it just as much.
Sorry. Done?
Yeah.
All right. I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. How has God treated all of us? And how do we treat other people? I think that's the comparison we have to look at here. We're going to see in verse 4 when the kindness and love of our God, of God our Savior toward man appeared, not according to what we did, but according to His mercy. When we see that in that light, and if we want to be like God, then how are we going to be treating other people? See, how does he put it in 2 Peter 3, I think verse 8, he says that God is not slack concerning His promises, but is what?
Long-suffering,
not wishing that but that all should come to repentance. Now, our goal in life is to bring repentance to people. Being harsh in our judgments, being rude, being obnoxious, being looking down on people, Are those going to bring people to repentance? See, generally not. And we don't want to be a hindrance to anyone's quest to become a servant of God, which brings us all the way back to verse 1. How many people see Christians disobeying laws of the land and just that's hypocrisy? And what do we do then? Once you see hypocrisy in someone, you care what they say? You're going to listen to them anymore? So, we were also once. And just stop right there. Whatever it is you're thinking about somebody else, you just remind, we were also once. Now, it may not be exactly the same. You know, one person may have a bad temper, one person may be greedy, one person may be a gossip. And the person they're looking down on, maybe it's something different. But as James put it, if you fall in one point, you're guilty what? You're guilty of all. So we're all sinners on the same level. We like to think, well, lying's not as bad as murder, or homosexuality is much worse than fornication. Does God make those kind of distinctions? See, we might look at something as being more disgusting, and other things as not being quite so bad, but God doesn't see it that way. And people are going to be cast into hell for lying. What about all liars? Well, they're going to the same place as the adulterers and the homosexuals and the sorcerers. As God told Saul, rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Now, if you were going to compare the two, somebody who's just stubbornly not going to do one thing God asks them to do versus somebody who is deeply steeped in idolatry and witchcraft and worshiping Satan, which one would we think? But God says the sin of rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and insubordination is like idolatry. And so, with God, and so we ourselves were also once, ought to be, we need to be reminded. That needs to be in the forefront of our minds from time to time. Because sometimes, even though we're supposed to be peaceable, gentle, humble, we tend to get a little arrogant and rude and obnoxious because we forget that we're no better than anyone else as far as God is concerned. We're all humans and we're all in sin. Carl?
We have to especially be careful of that because many of us was raised in Christian homes and we were taught common sense. But when I look out my window and see a school kid walking across that busy street with his head in his cell phone, I wonder, what's he thinking? And my daughter says, Dad, they weren't raised like you are. You were. They weren't raised with the common sense to be responsible for their own safety.
Right.
And we have to take these things into consideration nowadays, especially us older folks, because we just don't understand how these people think anymore.
Well, and as I say, there's two ways to look at it. You can feel contempt, or you can feel pity and sorrow and mercy. If you feel contempt, you're just going to shuffle them off into the garbage pile. If you feel mercy and compassion, you're going to try to figure out a way to help them. And that may not be possible. You really can't go out and tell that young boy, you know, you need to quit looking at that cell phone. He's liable to pull out a gun and shoot you or something. Charles?
Yeah, also, that's where patience comes in for us. We have to be patient also. And it does look... You know, we all have relatives or grandkids, whatever, you know. And someone was patient with me at some point in my life. It might not have been with a cell phone or anything like that, but there was probably something else that I did. And someone was patient with me. And where God is patient with all of us, it just comes back. And we have to do that. And whenever that we have to be patient with people. Whenever the time comes where we can talk with that individual, just as the example that Carl was using right there, a young man, a young lady, I saw you the other day, you were crossing the street, you know, and you had your cell phone on, and I've seen just what Carl was talking about a lot of times, you know. And maybe when we have that opportunity, to talk with that individual, or maybe it might be another person, you know, that we might be able to help them to understand that you may need to check out where you are. I'm going to make a right turn, and there were people with their cell phones on, never looked up, you know, to see that, whether there was a car there or not.
Right.
And all kinds of situations like that, you know. And, I mean, back when I was driving the city bus, you know, I mean, and that bus would hit you, and, I mean, you could just about, you know, in the safety, you were really gone, a goner. But we just have to be patient with people. And there's been time when I was driving that I would sit there and I would wait. And the person would never look up, and they would just be just dancing to the music or whatever, you know. And then finally, it would come to them that this car or this bus is trying to make this right turn, but they are the one is holding everybody up right now.
Right.
So.
And it's so easy to get irritated, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
It's so easy to get irritated with people who don't have common sense. And it's so easy to say that person is, and then we start to get stupid, jerk, moron, whatever. When the reality is, as Carl said, they're just, maybe they're foolish, maybe they're deceived, maybe their own lusts and pleasures are keeping them from seeing clearly. And it's easy. It's easy for us. But if it's easy for us, how much easier would it be for God to look down on us as stupid and ignorant and foolish? And praise to God that He doesn't look at people like that, because we all deserve that from time to time. We do something so, quote, stupid, and then we look back on it the next day and we think to ourselves, I'm sure glad God is a patient and merciful God. Rob?
Well, I view these things, as we encounter them daily, as tests. I say to myself, you know, what's my attitude here? These are tests. These are, and they can be weaknesses that the devil is trying to bring upon us, just to see, you know, our breaking point. And then to your point about God, I think of the prodigal son. You know, the father in that parable is God, and look how he received his sinful son and all that he had done. And, you know, as soon as he seen the son, he could have ridiculed him and gave him a list of things that he did wrong, but he received him in. Of course, the prodigal son himself, which represents the sinner, us, he had a repentant attitude. But I often think of God in that parable of how he looks down on us. And like you're saying, he could just destroy us and get rid of us. And then we have to be like him. And when we're dealing with our fellow man, it's never going to be a perfect situation. You're going to see something every day that's going to test your attitude and how you feel towards other people. And are you going to help them, or are you just going to say, they should know better and get out of my life?
Right.
You're just going to never not see that. It's just going to be in different forms.
Yeah, and we just, as I said at the very beginning of the class, we have to look at our particular weaknesses and try to figure out, okay, I've got all this information, I already knew it, probably most of you here didn't learn anything you didn't already know today, but we do need to be reminded, and maybe there's one little thing we can now focus on and make this week much more productive than last week. That's how you grow. You find something, and then you, okay, I'm going to remember this, and I'm going to make a mental note to work on this week and change a little bit. Johnny?
And I was told one time by a lawyer about common sense, that common sense has no place in a court of law. I didn't understand that right away. But looking back on it, whose common sense? Mine? Yours? The world? It's a broad spectrum there.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of common sense things that are not common sense to God, are they? So, all right. So, as we wind down the, did I see another hand? I don't want to miss anyone here. Okay. The reason that we need to be kind and patient, compassionate, loving, and merciful to other people is because we need it so much for ourselves. You can't apply what you want from God and then turn right around and do just the opposite for your fellow man. And so we've all got to take a good stock of ourselves. Sometimes after you've been a Christian for 20 or 30 years, you forget about verse 3. You forget that we were once foolish and disobedient and deceived and serving various lusts, because we've been taught these things, and we're good parents, and we are good workers, and we have a lot of knowledge and wisdom, and we tend to make very few mistakes. And at a certain point, you start becoming impatient. But the problem is, you know, for us, it's 20 or 30 years, but for God, what does that mean? What's 20 or 30 years for God?
Nothing.
And so we're no better than anyone else, regardless of how much we've grown and improved, because the only reason we could grow and improve is because of the Scriptures and because of God's help. I mean, really, how much credit can we take for any of this? It's God's mercy, it's God's wisdom, it's God's patience, it's God's Scriptures that gives us these things, and yet we tend to hold people in contempt if they can't measure up to the wonderful things that God has given us through His mercy and grace. All right, well, we'll pick up at verse 3 next week and start looking, I guess, at a few more vocabulary words. Thanks a lot, everybody.